These two elements put in context the electoral moment and the new military doctrine, the new measures announced by the US government. When one looks at the overall report and its recommendations, it is divided in six chapters. Of these six chapters, truly there's only one that we believe is relevant. Five of them are dedicated to what will be done the day that the revolution flies away. What will be the future of Cuba the day that there is no revolution and that there's no socialism in Cuba? And this could be a summer dream, and therefore we don't pay much attention to it. But the first chapter, the one that is dedicated to make recommendations in order to accelerate the so-called transition of Cuba towards a different kind of society, in other words, accelerate the destruction of the Cuban Revolution and what it stands for, are the ones that we pay particular attention to, and the ones that have a dangerous meaning today. The other five is like science fiction, and therefore we don't pay much attention to them. But of the ones that are included in this chapter, the one that is aimed at accelerating the destruction of the Cuban Revolution, it's based on four approaches, four areas in which the US government should act, and four areas to which they want to dedicate $59 million. Not $59,000, $59 million. One of these approaches is to foster insurrection in Cuba, to foster and fabricate dissent within Cuba by pumping millions of dollars into our country to groups or to individuals that will be ready to challenge Cuban laws and to challenge the government and the constitutional system in Cuba. In other words, to recruit mercenaries within Cuba to act against the government and to act, of course, against the revolution and the society that we have built. This in itself is an open act of aggression. In any jurisdiction, and when you look at it fairly, when you look at it under the principles of the United Nations, it's an act of aggression, openly declared by this plan. The second approach of this chapter of accelerating the so-called transition in Cuba is to increase the radioelectronic aggression towards our nation. And for this, it proposed, among other things, using military planes, they say in international airspace, which, as you might, if you know geography, you know there's not much international airspace between Cuba and the United States, to transmit and to try to break the capacity of Cuba to block radioelectronic aggression. This is an act, or this is a type of action, that puts the situation between our two countries on a very dangerous point. The possibility of mistake, the possibility of provocation, and the possibility of a military incident between our two nations is much greater if you put military planes on theoretically international airspace to attack radioelectronically another country. And this is something that cannot be ignored. In Canada, we call the attention of the government, of members of parliament, on this issue because it's an issue that threatens international peace and that threatens peace in our region. The third approach is to expand the economic blockade, to expand the actions internationally that help to limit Cuba's capacity to develop its economy. Now you have to understand that the economic blockade, according to our estimation, has cost Cuba already over $72 billion. For an economy the size of Cuba, with few resources, with few natural resources like we have, a cost of $72 billion is not something small. An aggression of that type against any country is something that should have a dramatic impact. Well, Cuba has suffered that, with impact in our economy and impact in the lives of our citizens. And you have to understand that the economic blockade is not only the refusal of the United States to trade directly with Cuba. It goes way beyond that. Cuba cannot export to any company in any part of the world, in any country of the world, if the importer is planning to produce and export to the United States. Regardless of the relationship of that country with Cuba, and regardless of the relationship of that country with the United States. Cuba cannot import any product from any country that has more than 10% of US capital, or more than 10% of technology of US origin. Regardless of the relationship of that country with Cuba, or the relationship of that country with the United States. Cuba cannot obtain financing from any of the international financial institutions. In fact, Cuba today is limited in obtaining financing from many national banks of many countries because of the level of engagement of those banks with the United States. It is estimated that in the past few years, the indirect impact of the economic blockade, the one that is not linked to trading directly with the United States, has cost Cuba over $256 million. Now, I explain this for you to understand that the economic warfare is already very comprehensive and already has a great impact. The fact that the United States, the US government, to be precise, and the enemies of Cuba in the United States feel that in spite of all of this, they still need to apply greater economic actions against our country is, among other things, an indication of the strength of the socialist model that we have been building. Because I would invite anyone to try to analyze the capacity of survival of any economy in the world that will be submitted to the level of economic aggression that Cuba has been submitted. Think of any country in this hemisphere, including Canada, that will suffer the level of aggression that Cuba has suffered for the past 4 or 5 years and still suffers today coming from the United States. And try to think if that economy would survive. If that economy would be able to provide a just, fair distribution, a just and fair distribution in terms of quality of life for its population. A modest one, a humble one, but a fair one. This is also an indication of the failure of the Helms-Burton Law in its fundamental aim, which is the destruction of the Cuban Revolution. Now, we should not be confused by this. The economic blockade does create and has created tremendous damage in Cuba. It does make life very difficult for each and every Cuban. And it does imply a very influential burden on our capacity to develop our economy. But it has failed. Against all prediction, it has failed to destroy the socialism in Cuba and to destroy the revolution that we have wanted to build. The fourth approach is to dedicate part of these $59 million to expand the already comprehensive war of propaganda against Cuba, to try to damage Cuba's relationship with other countries in the world, of course, including attempts to damage Cuba's relationship with Canada, with the Latin American countries, with the countries of the Caribbean, with the countries in Europe, in Asia, in Africa. We should expect, as a result of the implementation of this policy, an increased effort to fabricate lies about Cuba, try to confuse people regarding Cuba, regarding the Cuban people, regarding the Cuban Revolution. And therefore, those that do understand Cuba, those that feel informed about Cuba, should understand that this is happening, and that millions of dollars will be dedicated for this very specific purpose. It's not something that we fear as being something that will destroy the Cuban Revolution. It will also fail. Among other things, because the international community and people around the world increasingly understand the hypocrisy and increasingly understand the demagogic nature of U.S. foreign policy and its approach to the problems of the international community, including its approach to what we're doing in Cuba. Now, as a nation, of course, we have reacted. And we have to prepare ourselves to face these new measures. But we have to do it with calm. We have to do it with the benefit of the experience accumulated all these years. We have to do it with the strength of the knowledge that our people have, and that our government already has, of the limits of U.S. aggression if we are determined to defend our country. On the economic area, we have taken some measures to try to mitigate the potential impact of the expansion of the economic blockade. They are not absolute measures. They have not been dramatic up to now, but we need to organize ourselves to be able to face what impact they're going to have. But in the overall political and area, and the area of security, we have learned also to build a capacity to strengthen our defense capability without having to totally mobilize a country, without having to create panic, and without having to put our whole nation on a war footing. We believe that today we have the experience, that we have the strength, that we have the unity of our people, and that we have the level of conviction to be able to face measures of this type and others that could come in the future, knowing that if they were not able to destroy the Cuban Revolution in the 1960s, and they were not able to destroy it during the very difficult moments of the mid-1990s, it will be impossible to do it today. Yeah.